And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF, best little station in the nation. Welcome to the afternoon. Welcome to WMNF. Welcome to Art in Your Ear. My name is Joel Schilke. I am the hostess who loves you absolutely the mostest. And I just want to reiterate some of the stuff that happened on the great show, The Skinny, before mine. One of the guests was Carlton Ward Jr., amazing conservation photographer. He has a movie, as part of a movie, Path of the Panther, and that is showing in Lakeland this weekend at the Polk Theater. You can catch that. And let's see, what is today? Today the 17th. St. Patrick's Day. I'm wearing green. You think I would know that? Also, Lake Worth, Florida. Movies at Lake Worth it is showing. It's showing in Miami for my Miami listeners and all over. You can go online. Showing in Venice. You can go online to pathofthepanther.com and get lots of information about this amazing documentary. Amazing documentary about Florida. And yes, see it on the big screen. It's just, it's moving. Very, very moving. On today's show, in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking about Misery. Misery. What? Jobsite Theater is putting on Misery. Yes, that is the Stephen King novel and like the movie. So we're going to be talking about that. And then lots of stuff going on about town. So stick with us. Right now, I thought, hey, it is St. Patrick's Day, so I'm going to play a Irish artist. And this is a favorite song for many of our listeners, and for me. This is Vivian Long with Seahorse here on Art in Your Ear on WMNF 88.5 FM. I was trying to pick a song that was pretty much the opposite of what my guests and I are going to be talking about today. That's Vivian Long with Seahorse, one of my favorite Irish artists. Her music is beautiful. She's a violinist who does a lot with environment and nature songs. But even more exciting, welcome back to Art in Your Ear Airwaves, Summer Bowenkamp and David Jenkins. Thank you so much for bringing your job site theater into the studios.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
So you're doing Misery, which is, I mean, it's not a two-hander, but it's mainly a two-hander. It's there's another character, Buster, I think.
Right.
But it's mainly you two in it. When was Misery, like, David, you wrote on the website that you wanted this season to be, like, irresistible.
Correct.
To theater goers. And yeah. It seems like, good job.
Well, and just to people, honestly, like, right. I mean, you know, when we looked around and we picked the season out, we wanted to make sure. Okay. So quick story. There are people that all the time say, I go to the Strass Center all the time. Right. And then they'll be like, I just saw Phantom. And like Phantom hasn't been here in 15 years, right?
Right.
So like looking for titles that were like complete, you don't need to explain it to anyone, whether they're predisposed to go to the theater or not.
Mm-hmm.
And to get those people that you know, will come out for a Wicked or, right, Dracula or Hamlet. And if you look at the way we've programmed our season, that was how we did it.
And has it been working?
Oh, yes.
Good.
100% yes.
Good, good. I'm very glad. We have a good theater community in this area. And I feel like people are more likely to go watch a play now than they were 10 years ago, you know, because people have now know other people, and people who have moved here go to the theater and stuff like that. And I certainly want it to thrive, and I definitely want Jobsite Theater to thrive. So when you're choosing Misery, you know, because this is sort of the season sort of has this kind of strange bing bong all over the place. What's the Venn diagram between Misery and Hamlet and you've got Alice coming up, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what's... Is the familiarity?
Well, I mean, we have a certain aesthetic. Clearly, I have a certain aesthetic. Like, there's a bent among, like, you know, that many of our artists have, and clearly, aesthetically, the season relates that as well as the familiarity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After the last couple of years, look, a lot of theaters didn't make it through. We were lucky to, and we had burned through our cash reserves, right? And so you can't come out with, here's five brand new plays nobody's ever heard of, because
right.
Tampa will not come.
That's
to
true.
That.
Right.
Right? So we had to take the sure bets, and that's the Venn diagram. And so when you look at, if we're going to do shows that are known, we're not going after, you know, Arsenic and Old Lace and The Odd Couple and stuff like that. We're going to do Misery and Hamlet and Alice in Wonderland and, right?
And do it, I think, with that canvas that where you put the job site stamp on it, mm-hmm. which is a very, in a way, it's, I don't want to say specific, that's not the right word.
No, it's specific.
But there's a physicality to it. There's a kind of twistedness to it, and these are all good things. Like, none of this is anyway criticism. And there's an imagination that, you know, because one of the things I enjoy about going to the theater is I may have imagined something to be a certain way, and then to be completely wrong in my expectations is great, you know, because somebody has thought about this way more than I do. Listeners, we're speaking with two of the cast members from Stephen King's Misery. So how familiar were you with this play, not the movie, not the book? How familiar were you with the play before you guys said this one?
I'd never read the play before. I was only familiar with the film and long, long ago the book.
Did you watch the film or read the book and be like, oh yeah, I want Annie?
I've watched that movie like 100 times, so I didn't really need to watch it again to know to get the vibe on what we'd be doing.
But you had just recently watched the second season of Castle Rock, which is all about Annie Wilkes, right?
Yes, that's sort of, that's a little bit of a prequel to tell you a little more about Annie and her past.
So the just real quickly, if you would, for the people who are not familiar with Misery, just a thumbnail version of what happens in this play. /book/movie.
So, I mean, long story short, it's about a very successful romance novelist. We might refer to that as a sort of a trashy bodice ripper, right? You know, the Fabio covers and stuff like that. This romance novelist who every year goes to this place in Colorado to finish a book. And well, there's a time where he crashes in the snow. He like goes out in a snowstorm and a woman saves him. And, takes him to her house and then does not let him leave and then discovers that the guy has done something to a character that she does not appreciate. And so she refuses to let him leave the house until he fixes it. That's the most spoiler-free.
That was pretty spoiler-free. So you play Paul,
yeah,
the writer. Summer, you play Annie, the
crazy person.
The crazy person. Just before we got started, you said, you know, we were talking about Annie, and I asked if both Paul and Annie knew that they had in them what happens over the play. Like, if they knew, if you guys knew you had what's needed. But I think that as performers and directors and actors and creatives, that's not as important. Did they know? Did Annie know what she could do? Did Paul know what he could do?
I totally think that Annie absolutely knew her proclivity for revenge and harm and being very needy, taking things very personally that are not personal. Absolutely. She is a sensitive one.
Is she fun to play?
Yeah, I do have a good time out there for sure.
Is there anything about her that you are amping up that maybe is not obvious in the script, but you're just like, oh yeah, this one's mine?
Well, I think, you know, you have to like Annie a little bit. You can't just hate her the whole play and think that she's evil and awful. So she's also sweet. I mean, in her own, you know, demented way, right? But she's also sweet and she's funny and, you know, in addition to being a bit of a menace.
Does she know that she's demented?
I think so, yes. I think there are times that she totally believes that what she's doing is rational and real and sensible, because she also tries to get Paul to see, you know, don't you understand how important these things are? Mm-hmm. And she does believe that, you know, these characters in the book are real. They're real to her, mm-hmm, right? So, but yes, I think she she resists being as maybe evil as she turns out to be. But yeah, I think it's always been there.
Mm-hmm. And then going to Paul as a writer, as a romance writer, or more than a romance writer.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. So what, Paul also has his own little journey.
Yeah. And I think for Paul, like, the things I've latched on to, they're the things that, again, like, you know, Summer's talking about the things that make a character human, right? And for me, what I thought is really interesting is, like, there's this through line in the play, you know, that is very specific to the play, where he talks a lot of guilt about his life prior to getting there. He talks about his daughter. He talks a lot about his daughter and not being a good father and not being a good husband and, like, sort of all these things that trickle out in the play, that he's not the nicest guy. Mm-hmm. And he admits it. He talks about how obsessed he gets when he works, how, like, he doesn't look up from the keyboard. He wasn't there for his family. And then he's put in the situation where he has to be there for somebody else. And he resists the hell out of it, mm-hmm, you know, for a really long time. And I think Paul's journey, by the time it gets to the end, you know, again, I look at the things that are there in the script. There's this great monologue that does not exist in the film whatsoever in any way, shape, or form, where William Goldman, who adapted it, comes back full circle to those plot points about him learning something about himself. That and you know, whether we want to talk about things like Stockholm syndrome or sort of like battered person or a certain level of PTSD, like these things that are going on, by the end, Paul feels like this was an experience that has made him better.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like when you think about what happens, everything that happens, right. Better is not necessarily the first word that comes into mind.
Exactly. I mean, he uses the words, I am a better writer because of my experiences in writing this book, you know, and he believes that. And so I think maybe there's some penance. So this is a weird thing in not to give away all the secrets, but there are notes of penance for me that, like, as the play goes on, that Paul is almost taking some of this because somewhere in him, he thinks he deserves it.
So there's similarities between the two characters, the obsessiveness.
Yeah.
There's a similarity with that.
And they both can be vicious.
So, and I want to go back because we're making this sound very serious and stuff like that, but it's Misery by Stephen King. So, of course, it's dialed
it's
up
very funny.
To 11.
Right.
You know, like there's not a let's just chill out here on stage. It's not a calm thing. It's an exciting and kind of like, funny but active show. So I have two ways to go. But let me start with, is there something that you can give the audience, like a little scene or anything that you could do for the audience to give them an idea of how Annie and Paul interact?
Hey, look who's coming to stay with us.
Do you want to set it up so people know what I'm talking
about? Oh, yeah. So this is only a couple of scenes into the play. He's started to get a little bit of a flicker that she's not all there. And also that she's like a super obsessed fan, and he does have a new book that comes out like very shortly after he goes to her house, and she goes and picks it up, and he's a little freaked out that she's got the book because he knows what's in the book.
Okay.
And so when she shows up, she does not know what's in the book yet.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
Look who's come to stay with us. Mm. Oh, Paul, they had it at the general store, a bunch of them. I got the first copy. Paul, is that great or is that great?
I'll say it means roads are open.
Oh, well, you know, the one to town is, but that's about it. But I did call the hospital and I talked to the head honcho. I told him who you were and what happened. And he's going to send an ambulance for you as soon as the road to the hospital clears.
So the phones are working again.
Well, mine's still out when you know. But, you know, the ones in town, they're fine.
Did you call my agent? I gave you her number. Remember Marcia Sindel?
What do you think I was doing, Paul? Of course I called her.
I need to be back in New York for this press launch.
You could hear the relief in her voice.
did you reach my daughter?
Oh, your agent's going to call your daughter and tell her everything.
Okay. Thanks.
I don't trust them. I don't trust you. I don't trust you.
You shouldn't.
So we're speaking with Summer Bowenkamp and David Jenkins. They are performing in Misery at Jobsite Theater, opening up and then going through. Oh, I'm tapped away from the run of it. Sorry. But it opens up. It's already open, right?
Tonight we open
tonight
officially.
Tonight is the official open and then goes through April 9th of it. So I have to ask, and this is a personal question for you guys. You live together, you have a life together, and now you're attacking each other physically and trying to kill each other on stage on a nightly basis. How is, as performers, and you've worked together before, but this is the first time in a while that you've had this level of interaction in a play, I imagine.
It's the first time we've ever had this level of interaction in a play.
Right.
Is that, how is that? Like, were there certain things that you had to do so not every single 24/7 you're like misery, 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 or is it okay to be 24/7 misery, 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 misery?
I mean, so to answer your question, yes, it's okay, to be that way. But, the script is challenging. It's just the two of us, other than, you know, there are three scenes with Josh Goff, who plays Buster, the sheriff. So, you know, for about 60 pages of dialogue, it's just me and him. And so we, you know, in addition to rehearsing 5 days a week, when we leave rehearsal at night or in the afternoons, we would go sit and have a beer and continue working on our lines till, you know, midnight, 1 a.m., it's been pretty intense. It's been a huge challenge.
if you weren't a couple, like if you weren't living together, though, I mean, did that help? Did it make the play, your approach to the play smoother or more understandable, or did it in your own way tip over to obsession and they were kind of that type of thing?
I think we're just both very, we're both very hard workers, and we're both always seeking perfection. We're both not going to give up until things are right. And, you know, we supported each other in that to make sure that we got it right. And what it took to get it right was, at least for me, a whole lot more than I thought it was going to take. So every single one of those hours was needed. And, you know, we do what we got to do to make something successful.
Just reading the script, you can see, like, every single time there's, like, so many choices, line by line, and even, like, words within a line. There's so many choices for an actor to make in so many ways that things could go. And then, obviously, you have to play off yourself, so you want to make sure that your choices aren't cutting off the choices that another person can make. There's probably actor language for that, that, you know, or theater language, better language that I'm using for that. But will you talk a little bit about the process of how that sort of works together? How, like, when you find a scene and you want to interpret the way people are talking to each other, how does that develop? So you realize, like, this feels fresh to the audience and it feels logical and it fits with the script, but it also is right for how you see your characters.
Well, I mean, honestly, that really kind of begins and ends with the director, right? Mm-hmm. We can have all the choices, we can have all the inclinations we want. I mean, we, you know, and of course that's factored in, but, you know, Paul came in with a very specific vision of how he saw this play. And, you know, he from the beginning said, look, you know, we can't do the movie on stage. Like, I'm not going to have you ape Kathy Bates and James Caan. That would be a choice. It's a weird choice, mm-hmm. right? And that's one of those traps you fall into when a piece of culture crosses over so many different mediums, right? But then you see you'll have the fans that get really mad because it's not like Hermione's black and she wasn't black in the movie, you know, like people do weird stuff. And so, but Paul really had a clear line, I think, on what world he wanted this play to live in. And then, you know, there's some negotiation with that. And like I mentioned, there was something very particular about Paul that I found interesting, right? And so then that then feeds in through the whole story arc, mm-hmm. and from beginning to end, how that journey kind of goes.
Right. I mean, because a director would be wasting everyone's time if he had people like you cast and not listen to kind of what you were thinking, like worked all together because of
right.
your, I mean, that's what I think. And that's part of what I want to mention. That's part of the thing I really love about Job Site is that the knowledge that a lot of times everybody working has a lot of knowledge about the other person. And so you've worked together before. So you understand when to like let someone like when to get out of their way and when to get back in there and just that. Mm-hmm. And I love that about Job Site Theater because I feel like that's where that creativity blossoms, you know, like that's where I can walk into the theater and see something I had not anticipated because there was an allowance made for like whatever, like however it should go. I think I said that in a clumsy way, but I hope you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So working with Paul, I've never seen the movie Misery. I read the book.
What?
I've never seen the movie. I am a weenie. And if, I mean, the book haunted me literally for months and months because it's
and the movie is not as brutal as the book.
Oh, okay.
But the movie is still pretty brutal. Like Summer and I were just talking last night. She has a coworker that can't come see the show.
Right.
Cause it's just like,
honestly, hard for me to preview it, but I was like, I am a weenie. I am a total weenie. But then also I say that, but then I went to see, I saw one of your shows. It was like the bloodiest show you ever did. And I was like, that was great.
Lieutenant Finishmore.
Yes,
right. But again, that play, like Misery, like there's a balance of things. And I think that William Goldman, the guy who adapted the book for the screenplay and then adapted his own screenplay for the stage, he really understands the humor in it. There really is a tremendous, and it's dark humor, mm-hmm. of course. And it's something that, you know, even with the original Broadway production of this version, which is the last of five different play versions of this that exist, all of the New York press even like picked up on the fact that he was really trying to balance the laughs and the chills mm-hmm. in it. And so I think that helps, like it did with Lieutenant of Inishmore, right?
Like, right. Because then you feel weird because you're like, wow, that was incredibly violent, but I am laughing.
Right.
And it's great to be an audience member. Like, it's really great to be an audience member when you're taken, when that is what's going on for you, because you're like, ah, I didn't expect that, damn it.
Yeah.
Just quit messing with my head or keep messing with my head.
And for us, you know, it's one of the things that I think live theater does best that I'm very interested in. And it's something, again, when you, you know, I talk about my aesthetic or whatever, I love those kinds of shows. I love what that does in an audience when, like, you take them on this ride where it's like, oh, I'm laughing. Whoa, that just, oh my God. Right. Oh, no, I'm laughing again.
Right.
And, you know, that ride that you can really take in a live theater, that's really exciting for me. And I love, I mean, and again, I think our material selections show that.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that already you've had a great response.
Yeah, I mean, we've done our first two previews. They went really well. We're pretty much sold out for the first 2 weeks of the run. We just had to add shows.
Right.
Again, because you don't need to explain Misery. Although I'm really surprised the number of people who don't know this book or movie now. Because, again, you know, when you figure when this movie came out in 1990, it was such a huge piece mm-hmm. of pop culture. But that was 33 years ago.
hush your mouth. Hush your dirty mouth.
Right? So young people definitely don't. They're like, what's that?
And it's crazy. Well, that was, I kind of want to get into that because you two have lived a somewhat public life. You're mm-hmm. theater people. You're in front of people. I was mentioning before the show, you know, there was the only, like, not famous, but the only public thing I've ever really done is, you know, this here at WMNF. I had a TV show for a while, but I don't think anybody ever watched it. Mm-hmm. But it brings out something in others sometimes, just having notice, like when people know you, but you don't know them, you know, that sometimes people are weird. Have you guys ever had any kind of weird experiences from fans?
Yes.
And does this, you know, by doing this show, I mean, it really, when I was reading the script and when I was thinking about it, when I knew we were going to do this, I was thinking about it. And right now, Donald Glover just debuted his first new show after Atlanta, and it's about like an overzealous fan. And I think we've seen that. So, you know, how did that kind of like your own feelings about that in doing this show and fandom and the overzealousness, how did any of that play into what you guys are doing on stage or thinking about with Misery?
I mean, for me, it's so the closest example I have, and look, I mean, I'm not saying I'm famous by any stretch of the imagination. We always joke, hashtag Tampa famous. Mm-hmm. But I cannot even begin to tell you the number of awkward conversations I've had with human beings outside of the theater when I'm just trying to walk out the door and have a cigarette and go home. Right. Or like you're out having dinner somewhere and somebody just comes over to the table and starts talking to you. On one hand, that's amazing, right? Like on one hand, that's awesome. And on one hand, like I love that. On the other hand, sometimes I'm just trying to have dinner with my wife. And like, and sometimes when you feel like somebody's not picking up on the other social cues, like, oh, it's our anniversary. Like, that's so great. I'm so glad you enjoyed the show. We're just enjoying our anniversary.
Right.
Right. And they don't
this
leave.
Very private, personal time.
Right. So I, you know, and again, I've not had like an Annie Wilkes by any stretch of the imagination, but that feeling, that sensation of, you've given me the willies.
Right. And that you are, that they own a piece of you. Like they own this portion of the time.
Right, which is also actually factual, right? Like, I mean, you can't live a public life. You can't be mad when you do something well and somebody sees you in public and wants to be like, hey, you're awesome,
right.
You know, or like, but then, you know, then it moves into the other stuff.
Right, right.
Like, yeah.
Summer, you've just been sort of having interesting expressions on your face throughout this whole thing.
Oh, no, I'm just thinking back to a specific person who was a big fan, came to a lot of shows, and we would all make sure that we didn't talk about where we were going or what we were doing after the show because this person would wait out front even overhear us and then would be at the place where we'd be going to have food or a drink or whatever we were doing after rehearsal.
You're not talking about me, right?
I know one time we talked about how we were going to a movie the next day when we were going to be off, and lo and behold, that person was at the movies. So yeah, there are some, I think she's the most interesting person I can think of.
And so, dear listeners, I'm just saying for all of us here in the studio, we love you and we appreciate you very much, but yeah, please draw a line sometimes. Every once now. So in doing Misery, one of the things that also struck me, and I don't think this is a giveaway, but how many weapons there are in one play, in one house.
There really are. There's a lot of weapons.
Three guns,
a knife, big knife.
And a sledgehammer.
And a syringe. A glass of soapy water. A ream of paper. I'm trying to think of all the things I get abused with at some point. A typewriter.
A typewriter, yeah, that's a big one.
there's a lot of weapons.
So there's this always, once the play gets going, there's this atmosphere of violence, of potential violence there. And then, which is a contrast with the sort of caring, loving environment that Annie is trying to, like, this loving, creative environment and stuff like that.
I'll love you to death.
I know, right?
Yes.
So in doing that, will you guys just talk a little bit about how, because the stage looks really amazing, you know, and how that kind of, like, you wanted the blocking, how you and Paul, everybody wanted, like, the violence depicted or not depicted, how you wanted, would it always need to be a surprise, or would it have to be a tension release, or, you know, how you wanted that happen? Because it seems that sometimes that there is, like, an edge of humor to some of the violence. And so that's so specific. We've been talking about, you know, the dark stuff and the humor, but sometimes the violence is used for humor.
I'm not sure I can think of a specific instance. Maybe the lead up.
The lead up or the release off the violence. There's often humor to release us off moments
of
violence.
Maybe that's a better way to say it.
Yeah, like something horrible happens and then Annie kind of quips back with a one-liner.
Right.
Which then pulls us out of the, like, oh my God, that just happened, you know? And so I think that's very intentional. I think we're handling all the violence in the show very realistically. Mm-hmm. Pain is something that, is very present in the play. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, again, talking about the ride, you can't leave people in that place. And so usually whenever there are these, you know, horrible moments of violence, something happens to lighten the mood up, like, immediately.
Right.
Until it doesn't.
Right. Right. This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. And was that, I mean, in doing the pain, the only time, I'm not an actor, I'm not a performer, but when I was in college, because I had purple hair, I got cast in everything, you know, because it was before anybody colored their hair. And a lot of times I would be performing something and I would feel it, like I would physically feel it. And pain was one of them. There was one show where there was a lot of, you know, kind of stage hitting. But I did feel like it was hurting me, you know, because that was the language and everything like that. Do you feel, like, how do you do that? How, as performers, do you then separate yourself from the emotions and the energy and the adrenaline and stuff that is there going on?
Well, the good thing is there's so much real pain on both of us right now that maybe we aren't noticing the residual psychosomatic mental pain that's manifesting itself. You know, but what's funny is I spend the bulk of the show either in a bed or in a wheelchair, and I am physically wrecked right now. And it's not just because of the bits of combat, but, you know, living in a body that is supposed to be basically destroyed. I can't move my feet or my toes during the show, right? Ooh. Like, if I'm moving my feet and my toes, they're going to be like, psh, your legs are fine, right? And living in a like in an uncomfortable place. Like he talks about how uncomfortable that wheelchair is. You know, his legs are all propped up, and you know what? It's uncomfortable,
right?
And my legs are in braces, and you know, I am falling on the ground. So there is I'm in a lot of real physical pain.
Right. And is she? I mean, there's mental pain, anguish. I think for Annie, is she?
I mean, I'm fairly technical about things. Mm-hmm. I'm not a method person. I don't take any of that home. I don't really think about the emotion. I think about how to portray that is how the character feels. Maybe that sounds a little cold, but
no,
like,
but you don't
I'm
need to
fine.
Feel it.
Nah.
Right. And I would say the same thing too. Right. You know, like I was talking about PTSD and maybe there's some Stockholm syndrome or, you know, like some other stuff going on with Paul about why he stays and sort of how things go. I'm not taking any of that home.
Right.
With me.
It's Paul's thing. It's not David's thing. It's Anne's thing, not Summer's thing.
Yeah. I'm not taking any of that home. And it hasn't impacted this relationship, which seems to be the question everybody wants to ask. Like, oh my God, are you worried she's going to stab you in the neck in the middle of the night? And I'm like, well, she hasn't done it for the past 22 years.
Right.
I don't know why now she would do it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and I really like it. Like if I cry or get upset on stage and I see other people getting upset or, you know, when I do something terrible and people gasp or, you know, I want to make sure that other people think what I'm doing is real. Obviously, it's totally not.
And how is it? Do you, so working together on a show, are you all like, okay, in 22 years, we'll do it again? Or you're like, oh, I really like this. This is fun. Where are you guys on that?
I totally think we'd work together again.
Yeah.
It's good. And we've like,
it would
directed...
be hard to be less committal than that.
Right. I mean, I've directed him before. Mm-hmm. He's directed me before.
We've directed together.
Right.
We've been in shows together. Well, I mean, honestly, like we don't really know anything else other than working together because mm-hmm. when we met, we were both working on the same show. We worked in the same building together for a really long time. I still work with her in some capacity at the Strass Center with her job. Like, mm-hmm. so Summer always says we're both really good at compartmentalizing things, and you know, work is work, business is business, home is home.
That's right.
That's just really not an exciting story to talk about.
Be a good Gen Xer and tamp that down.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yay. Yay, team. That's right. If there's an emotion that we're not into feeling, then we're just going to put it away.
That
when we're 95.
That's right.
My grandmother used to tell me, who died at 96, she's like, when things were really rough, she's like, well, I'll worry about this later. And she said when she turned 95, she's like, well, I didn't expect to hit 95 and now I have to worry about all those things. She's like, no, you don't, Grandma. Well, what's coming up then after Misery? What's next for Jobsite Theater?
We are doing a cabaret spectacle based on the work of Lewis Carroll. So it is not only Alice in Wonderland and Alice's Adventures Through the Looking Glass, but other of his poetry. We've got original music by a whole bunch of people like Jeremy Douglas, and I think Edwell Till is lending some lyrics, and Colleen Cherry and Cassandra Rose, and we've got Spencer Myers making all these amazing giant puppets.
Ooh.
So if people like Shock-Headed Peter, come catch some more of that weirdness.
You know, I had two people over the last five days, ever since I said that you guys were coming on, I had two people tell me that Shock-Headed Peter was their favorite show that they've ever been to.
Nice.
And two separate people, not like a couple or anything like that. Twice, unsolicited, just said how much they love that. So I can imagine that Alice is going to be another fantastic show. And I think Jeremy did the music. Did Jeremy do music for Misery, or is it just
Jeremy did do the music for Misery, yes.
So so that's really talented. So, and Alice is going to be in May 12th, so hopefully I'll see you guys for that as well, because I think. And then you're doing Bringing Back.
Lizzie. Yep.
So it really is kind of just the most fun you could have at a theater. Lizzie was a surprising show in that it was just so constantly funny and delightful. And again, Lizzie Borden, I mean, also another little violent play. So.
And we just announced our new season too.
Oh, really?
It's not even on the internets yet.
And you want to say anything to
I can do it really quick.
Okay, yes.
So we're bringing back the cast of Hamlet for Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
That's so smart.
So we're going to flip all them over. Then we've got Nick Deere's Frankenstein, which some people might know was the one with Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch that was done at the National. We are doing Shakespeare again. This is in the Jade. We're doing Twelfth Night. Then we are doing Martin McDonagh's The Beauty Queen of Lenan. Then we are doing a new weird Shocketed Peter thing to a unfinished play by Federico Garcia Lorca called El Maleficio de la Mariposa, The Evil Spell of the Butterfly. And so we're going to do some weirdness there. Then the Rocky Horror Show in Jabe in June. And then Giles Davis will do a one-person show by Ronan Noon called The Smuggler, which he did down at Urbanite Theater in Sarasota last year. So we're excited about that.
Oh, that sounds really great.
Yep.
That sounds really fun. Well, you heard it here. Well, not first, but you heard it on the radio.
You did hear it first on the radio.
Yeah.
Because only people have seen it in their programs
That's
up to
right.
this point.
That's really exciting. And then do you get any breaks, any trips
we're
to
going
Paris?
On vacation to the Galapagos at the end of May.
Are you really? Oh, good. Good. Excellent. That'll be wonderful. Well, again, Misery opens officially tonight. It goes through, and then why do I keep doing this? April 9th. Mm-hmm. April 9th. And this is that with the added performances?
We added performances on Wednesdays, the third and fourth week, which we didn't originally have on the schedule.
Oh, okay.
So those just opened up, and those are also, I know we can't say prices, but they're very low priced on the Wednesday
Great.
Nights.
And then I know some of the shows you do high school or student mm-hmm. stuff. Is Misery one of the shows?
No.
I was going to say, that one I could see. I think the kids would probably love it.
We're going to do Misery Junior for the kindergartners.
You hit them with noodles or something.
I mean, her worst curse word is cock-a-doodie. So, you know.
So language isn't the issue here.
Right.
We're not worried about the language. We're just worried about mom and dad and the letters they're going to write. So, thank you both so much. I did not choose any of the music. Thank you for sharing. I have to say, one last thing. I know I'm keeping you all here, but one of the things I enjoy and appreciate very much about JobSite and your promotion for the stuff is that you put up your Spotify lists. You put up, there's always a short sort of film about it, the photos and stuff. So that is always wonderful. And I so enjoyed listening to the Spotify list, but I ended up not picking, I was going to play the Liberace, but I ended up not picking it. But because there were so many songs I already picked for you guys. So this song is called Lucky and it's by a band called Dead. And this was just when I was listening to it last night, I was like, oh, that's a good song for the Misery show. So thank you. Once again, my guests have been Summer Bonenkamp and David Jenkins from JobSite Theater, wonderful theater based out of the Straz in downtown Tampa. You can go online to jobsitetheater.org to get more information. Or you can always, of course, call the Straz. And Summer, you're going to have to do that because I just don't have it in front of me.
If you call us at 813-229-7827, the box office is open from noon to 7 today.
And isn't that star? At the end.
It is 813-229 star.
Thank you so much for indulging me. I always appreciate when people do. Here on Art in Your Ear on WMNF 88.5 FM. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with some stuff going around. And that again is dead. And dead is spelled D-E-H-D. Not a new band, but a band that sort of came together during the pandemic. Well, there's some stuff going on about town. We just talked about Misery. And then, let me get back. I have some stuff on my laptop. I've got some stuff on the computer. We talked about The Path of the Panther. Again, if you listened to The Skinny today, they talked a little bit about what happened with Ben at Axios, but then they also interviewed Carlton Ward Jr. about the movie Path of the Panther, and that is showing in Lakeland this weekend at the beautiful Polk Theater and showing also at Lake Worth, Florida. Movies at Lake Worth tonight. It's in Miami. It's all over. You can go to Path of the Panther to get more, pathofthepanther.com. It's a movie about the Florida Panther and saving it. Our guests last week were at Campground, and they are having a show tonight at The Factory in St. Pete. The Factory is located at 2622 Fairfield Avenue South, and this is new music and interdisciplinary art is on there. They also have a, so I think there is a, let's see, there's a concert today at 2 p.m., and then there's a concert tonight at 7:30 p.m., and then, is that it? And then tomorrow, there is a concert at Campground, and that's located at 4216 North 31st Street here in Tampa, Florida. If you want some more information, you can go online to WMNF Art in Your Ear page, and we've got info up there, or you can go to their website. It's contemporaryartmusicproject.org. Did I say that right? I think so. I'm just messing up. There's also coming up next week. Is it next week? No, it's a little bit further away from that. There's going to be film screenings for three new dance films. Those are on Tuesday, March 28th at 8 p.m. And those are going to be, that's an event by Art to Action and the Screen Door. It's at the Ybor City Micro Cinema. And this is such an interesting area. It's where Tempest Projects and Quaid and the Micro Cinema, all in the Crest Building. It's where the Florida Photography Museum is moving to. And so that is going to be Tuesday, March 28th. And really, I'm so excited. There is a fundraiser for March 24th, I believe it is, for Tempest Projects, a big party for that. And we're going to be posting about that as well. Well, we are almost out of time. I see the beautiful E-Love is in the studio getting ready for her show. I know Live Music Showcase and E-Love's Global Electronica show comes on just after the NPR News at 1. And then after that, of course, is Live Music Showcase. And they're in there setting up for a band to come in. After that is the Rhythm Revival, which is a reach into the roots of rock and roll, plus all sorts of fun songs and stories about musicians. And if you love music, it's a music lovers show. We start off our evenings with the Soul Party, and then the Soul Party is definitely classic R&B and soul. We get more of that rhythm-based music at 8 o'clock with Da Soul Kitchen. Our two chefs, Chef Eddie Green and then sous chef David Bryant put out all sorts of rhythm-based music. It's a wonderful party, and they also want to know what you're eating for supper. That's always interesting. And then we end up our night with Flashback Friday, and that's Florida Soul, Florida R&B, and it is made by people that maybe go to the same store as you. And here, we just have a little announcement for you.
Today's vehicles are so much safer and environmentally friendly that it only seems right to offer them a safe and environmentally friendly option when they're ready to retire, like donating it to WMNF. Go to WMNFcar.org for details.
There you go. Well, you have been listening to Art in Your Ear on WMNF. My name is Jolene Schilke, and we're going to go out with some Astrid Gilberto and with Antonio Carlos Gilberto with The Waters of March, or otherwise known as Agua de Beber. Thanks for listening. Today you have been listening to WMNF. WMNF, the best little station in the nation. WMNF Tampa. See you next week. Bye now. Eu quis amar, mas tinha
Bye.